Take your Bibles now and turn to 2 Samuel chapter 23. 2 Samuel 23. It's on page 351 if you're using the Pew Bible. We've been spending a lot of time in the book of Ephesians, and we're going to continue with Ephesians through the summer and fall. But today we're looking at this interesting passage in the Old Testament, a passage about David's mighty men, his mightiest warriors. And actually, we're just going to read about the three greatest of his mighty men. And from this passage, I'm going to speak particularly to the men of the congregation. The things that we talk about apply to all of us, but I'm speaking even more directly to men. And so whether you're a father or not, or whether you're young or old, I'm speaking to you, you men. What does it mean to be a man? One of our presbytery meetings, Charles Brown preached on this message, and I borrowed some of these ideas and thoughts from him, and my mind's been sort of chewing on this for ever since the last presbytery meeting. So I'll read 2 Samuel 23, starting at verse 8 and reading through verse 12. Remember, this is God's holy word, which restores the soul, so let's listen. These are the names of David's mighty men: Jashub, Bashabeth, a Tachmenonite, was chief of the three. He raised his spear against 800 men whom he killed in one encounter. Next to him was Eleazar, son of Dodai, the Ahohite. As one of the three mighty men, he was with David when they taunted the Philistines, gathered at Pas Damim for battle. Then the men of Israel retreated, but he stood his ground and struck down the Philistines till his hand grew tired and froze to the sword. The Lord brought about a great victory that day. The troops returned to Eleazar, but only to strip the dead. Next to him was Shammah, son of Agi, the Hararite. When the Philistines banded together at a place where there was a field full of lentils, Israel's troops fled from them. But Shammah took his stand in the middle of the field. He defended it and struck the Philistines down, and the Lord brought about a great victory. And then I'm going to read one verse from 1 Corinthians 16, verse 13. It says, "Be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, and be strong." That's the word of God. Some years ago, there was a song that was sung by a band called the Crash Test Dummies. It was a song called Androgynous, and I had to look up that word. Androgynous is a term that simply means the blurring of the lines between genders. Men acting more like women and women acting more like men. And this song begins as a play on the classic Dick and Jane readers that many of us grew up with. See Jane Run, Run Jane Run. The song goes like this. Here comes Dick. He's wearing a skirt. Here comes Jane, you know she's sporting a chain. Same hair, revolution. Unisex, evolution. In our society today, we're trying to get rid of, or we're losing, gender identity, trying to ignore gender differences. And yet in the midst of our confused culture, God clearly urges men to be men, to act like men, and women to be women, to act like women. And so as I speak particularly to you men today, the message, in one sense, is very simple. Be a man. Act like a man. Well, that sounds good and all, but what does it actually mean to be a man? What does it look like to act like a man? There are certain things that we associate with masculinity, like facial hair and sports and hunting. These things sort of make us feel like men. I remember the first time that I went hunting, I should clarify that this is the only time that I've ever been hunting. I was with a group of guys hunting pheasants, and I felt like a man. There was something about being with a group of guys with some guns in the woods. And even after we were all done hunting, they even let me hold one of the guns. And it was, it made me feel good. Well, is that what defines a man? The idea of what a man should be like, how a man should act, and what a man should do is very distorted in our culture today. In our culture, a real man drinks a lot. He should like women, shouldn't shy away from pornography, should shoot guns, should be able to fight, should be strong, athletic, be able to hunt. And the pressure is if you don't do any of that stuff, then you're not a real man. Well, God tells us to act like men. He also tells us how we're supposed to, or how a man is supposed to act. And so it doesn't have to do with how good you are at hunting or sports or how far you can spit. That doesn't make you a man. God tells us what it means to be a man. And so we're going to go through this passage and just learn some principles from these men about what it means to be a man. David's 30 mighty men, these are the greatest warriors in his army. They were his special forces, his Navy SEALs. They were called on to do the toughest jobs. And of these 30 men, the first three he names are the greatest. Jashobeam, which is how it's pronounced or spelled in the NIV, Jashobeam killed 800 men in one encounter. Eleazar, when the Israelite army ran away, afraid of the Philistines, he stood his ground. He struck down the Philistines until his hand grew tired and froze to the sword. And Shammah, in a similar event, as the Israelite army fled again in fear, he stood his ground in a lentil field, of all things. He stood his ground in a lentil field, and the Lord brought about a great victory. So what do we learn from these men? What do we learn about being men? Well, the first thing that I want to point out is that they fought for their king and their king's kingdom. They fought for the king and his kingdom. These men were not fighting for themselves, for their own glory, to establish their own kingdoms, but they fought for the king and his kingdom. The king's kingdom was under attack, and they stood and they fought. They didn't run away. They didn't avoid the fight to live sort of peaceful away from the battle. But rather, they were in the thick of it. And sure, they were protecting their own families, their own homes, their own cities, their own friends, because they were a part of the kingdom. But it's far from just a personal fight for survival. They were fighting for something much bigger, fighting for this king and his kingdom. King David was the appointed king. He was the anointed king chosen by God to rule over the kingdom of Israel. And these men were unflinchingly devoted to serving this king and to protect his kingdom. Well, how does this story, this concept of mighty men fighting for the king and his kingdom apply to us today? Well, the historic figures and characters and events in the Old Testament are symbolic of great spiritual realities that we live in today. And here's how. We live in the middle of war. All the Old Testament warfare is symbolic of the greater war that we engage in day to day that's going on right now. This war is going on all throughout the world, all throughout the universe, and all throughout our own lives. It's not just a war between humans or nation against nation, but it involves angels and demons. It actually includes God himself and Satan. It's a cosmic battle. It encompasses all of creation. And this is the cosmic war between the power of Satan and the kingdom of Jesus Christ. And all of us, in some way or another, for one side or another, are engaged in this war. And those of us who swear allegiance to Jesus Christ through faith, we are warriors loyal to the king, and we fight for his kingdom. We fight against the enemies of the king. The kingdom of Israel in the Old Testament is symbolic of the church today, the kingdom of the church today. The church, the redeemed ones. We, as John said earlier, we're the new Israel. We're the chosen ones. We're the true descendants of Abraham through faith in Jesus Christ. We are the kingdom. And King David is symbolic of King Jesus, the perfect king who rules over the church as well as ruling over the entire universe. Everything belongs to him. The enemies of the Old Testament, like the Philistines, Egyptians, Babylonians, the Assyrians, they are symbols, they're symbolic of the great enemy that we fight today, the kingdom of Satan. And so as warriors, we fight for our king and his kingdom. But we wage not a physical war so much, but a spiritual war. This war enters the physical realm, no doubt. But we fight against rulers and authorities and powers of darkness and against the spiritual forces of evil throughout the universe. We fight to defeat Satan and all who swear allegiance to him or all who follow him. And then for this war, we're armed with the necessary weapon. We aren't relying on the spears and swords of the Old Testament, and neither do we rely on the tanks and guns and missiles of this age, but we wage war with a much more powerful weapon. We're armed with the double-edged sword of the Spirit, the Word of God, the truth of Jesus Christ. And it's this weapon that's able to defeat the powers of evil. And it's able to divide the soul of any man, woman, or child. A powerful weapon. And so all of us, men, women, and children, we are all warriors fighting with the sword of the Spirit, loyal to the King, fighting for his kingdom, standing strong against the enemy. And the reason I'm speaking to you men particularly, to us particularly, is because we need to be leading the way in this war. Too oftentimes, the church raises men who are disengaged from battle. They're on the back lines. Lots of churches are filled with women, and men are nowhere to be found. We raise weak men who don't know how to stand firm and fight. We need men, mighty men. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that you go off and fight in some foreign place, some exotic place. But rather, you simply stand firm right here where God has planted you. When Shammah went out to war, he stood shoulder to shoulder with the Israelite army. The Philistines came on strong. The Israelites ran in fear. But it says that Shammah stood his ground in a lentil field. Of all the fields, he was protecting a lentil field. A seemingly insignificant piece of property. It seemed like it was almost a waste of time, a waste of life. It wasn't a field of gold. It wasn't a field or it wasn't a big city or a castle that he was defending. It was a lentil field. Well, God has placed us in the lentil field of Beaver Falls in Beaver County, western Pennsylvania or eastern Ohio. And really, in the grand scheme of it all, we're a very small congregation in a relatively speaking insignificant part of the world. Insignificant in the eyes of men. And even as individuals, it doesn't seem like our work is really that important. It's almost insignificant. But no, God's placed you in this lentil field to stand firm against the enemy. And so you fight as mighty men who fight for Jesus Christ and his work. You fight for your community. You fight for your wives. You fight for your children. He's given us men a task to be relentless warriors, fighters, fighting for our King by seeing all of culture, all of work, all of life transformed, by fighting to protect and love and serve our wives and our children. In our communities. In the grand scheme of it all, it may feel like we don't accomplish a whole lot in our day-to-day living. We feel like we're fighting in an insignificant lentil field. Who cares if this is lost? But this is precisely where God's placed you to fight. And you're called to stand firm and fight for his kingdom. So don't retreat in the face of danger or pressure or difficulty or struggle. Don't compromise the mission by being distracted by the temptations of the world and being rendered useless for this battle. But stand firm and fight like a man. Fight for your King and his kingdom. Standing firm in your lentil field. Fighting for your community, your culture, your wife, your family. And fight till your hand freezes to the sword. Not giving up. So first, real men are to stand firm and fight for the King and his kingdom. The second thing we learn from these mighty men is that as they fight for the King, they're also fighting like their King. As they fight for the King, they also fight like their King. These mighty men have put their lives on the line to fight against the enemy and to protect and advance the kingdom. They fought sacrificially. Their life was on the line. They were ready to die. When you read stories of these mighty men and the victories that they had, it reminds us of the great victories that David had, and particularly the one when he was a young man against Goliath. Many years before David was enthroned as king, when he was a teenager, he served his father as a shepherd. Some of his older brothers went off to war to fight. And David's father sent David to take some food to his brothers there in the battlefield. And when David got there, there was no fighting going on. Instead, the Israelites were filled with fear. They were hiding. There was a champion warrior from the Philistines named Goliath who stood 9 feet tall. He wore heavy armor and wielded massive weapons. And every day, morning and evening, Goliath came out. He taunted the Israelites, inviting one man to come and fight. But the Israelites were afraid. No one was going to go out and fight this giant. David, a young man, volunteered to do it. And he wondered why no one else would. No one else would put their lives on the line to fight for the king and his kingdom. And with everyone else fighting or hiding in fear, David went out. He faced that giant Goliath. He put his life on the line. And as he ran toward Goliath, he slung that stone that sunk deep into Goliath's forehead, knocking him back. David grabbed his sword and cut his head off. When everyone else was afraid, when everyone else was in retreat, David put his life on the line. Stood his ground. He fought. And these mighty men were doing the exact same thing for their king and his kingdom. David, of course, points us to the greatest warrior of all, Jesus Christ. Jesus came to earth because no one else could stand. No one else could stand against the great enemies of Satan and sin and death. And we were gripped by the fear of death. We're enslaved by Satan and sin. But Jesus came and he confronted these greatest enemies of ours. And he accomplished his victory in a very unexpected way by laying his life down, by putting his own life on the line. Laying his life down on the cross, he sacrificed himself. And for 3 days, it seemed that he had lost the battle, that Satan had won. But on that third day, he rose again from the dead, which proved that through his death, he actually delivered that fatal blow to Satan. And he defeated death and sin. He conquered them, freeing us from their fear and bondage. Jesus, the greatest warrior of all, put his life on the line. And he accomplished our salvation by defeating our greatest enemies. Well, as those who've been redeemed by this great warrior king who sacrificed himself for us, we now are called to put our own lives on the line for him and his kingdom. Now that death actually has no power over us, we're called to put our lives on the line. To sacrifice, to die for the king and his kingdom. As warriors for the king, we're to follow our king into battle, putting our lives on the line, standing firm in the lentil fields of our lives. We're to sacrifice. We're to live as humble servants of Christ at your work, in your community, at home, with your wives, with your children. As a husband, you fight relentlessly to love and protect and nurture your wives, your wife and your children. This is a picture of a man who's very inconsistent with the definition of masculinity in our own culture. It's a very different picture. But this is the definition of a real man. Are you fighting for the king, laying down your life where God's placed you? The enemy would love to see you adopt the principles of the world here. He'd love to see you run by those principles there at work. And in your community. He wants to see your community divided. He would love to destroy your marriage and to scatter your children. Are you standing firm, putting your life on the line, fighting for your king? Right there in your lentil fields. Christ came to serve, not to be served. And he won the victory for us. And so now we are to live not to be served, but to serve. And through that service, the kingdom will be protected and advanced. So we fight for the king, and we fight for his kingdom, and we fight like the king. We fight sacrificially. And third, we fight with the king. When David fought Goliath, he fought in the name of God, and that's where his confidence rested. When he approached Goliath, he yelled out to him. He said, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. And this day the Lord will hand you over to me. I'll strike you down and cut off your head. Today I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those who gather here will know that it's not by the sword or the spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands." When David ran out to battle there and put his own life on the line, he didn't do so with confidence in his own skills and abilities. It's not like he was this great warrior. But his confidence rested in the fact that God was with him and would grant him victory. As he fought for his God fought for him. As Jesus sends us out and urges us to stand firm in the lentil fields of our lives and of this world, he doesn't send us out on this job with this task alone to do the job, resting on our own skills and abilities, but he promises that he's with us and fights with us to accomplish victory. In the book of Joshua, as Joshua and the Israelites were going off to war to conquer the Canaanites, in the Old Testament, Jesus in an Old Testament figure appeared to Joshua in the form of the angel of the Lord. And Joshua bowed before him, and the Lord commissioned Joshua. He commissioned him to go to war, and he said, "Be strong and courageous. Don't be terrified. Don't be discouraged. For the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. The Lord your God will give you victory." It wasn't the size of the army or the talent of these fighting men. It was the power of God. Jesus said something similar to his disciples. After he rose from the dead, just before he ascended into heaven, he gathered his disciples around and he sent them into war, saying, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all the nations. And remember, I'm with you always, even to the very end." When we stand firm and fight, we're not fighting with the confidence that we have it all figured out. We know how to fight. We're more powerful. If that's how we fought, we'd fail and lose every time. We'd be destroyed. We go to war resting in the power of our King. And the promise of his victory. We don't expect that it'll be through our own faithfulness that we'll be able to transform business in our own community. It isn't through our own faithfulness that we'll perfectly love and protect and nurture our wives, our children. Because every day we fail. Every single day we fail. We're selfish. We don't stand strong. We want to run away. We want to just be comfortable. We want to avoid the fight. We don't use our sword well. We don't know how to use our sword well. But our confidence comes not from our own skills and abilities, but rather it comes from the fact that our King fights for us and with us. And he empowers our imperfect, feeble attempts, and he accomplishes his purpose and brings about a great victory. I know you feel like a failure in various parts of your life. You can't go through life without feeling like a failure. All of us have failed. But you're not fighting alone. Confidence rests in the fact that your King fights with you. And he accomplishes his purposes through you. He empowers us and promises us victory. And that leads us to the last thing that we must know as warriors. We fight for the King and his kingdom. We fight like the King through sacrifice. We fight with the king in our promised victory. And last, we fight trusting in the king's victory. We fight trusting in the king's victory. Fighting against rulers and authorities and spiritual powers of evil in this universe is very frightening and daunting. You don't want to just lightly enter into battle with these kinds of forces. But as we wage war against these powers, we wage war knowing that the victory has already been won, actually. When Jesus died on the cross, there was this great clash between the giants of the universe. Jesus waged war against Satan, sin, and death. And from that clash, Jesus arose victorious. Through his death and resurrection, Jesus defeated everything. He defeated every enemy that has any ultimate power to harm us. Satan, sin, and death. He defeated those enemies. And so as we engage in battle, we remember that there's no enemy left that actually has any power to ultimately bring us down. They can persecute us and kill us, but we still win. There's no enemy left that can stand against us. Because Jesus accomplished victory. And every enemy that can cause harm has been defeated by our champion. It's been accomplished. And so now we go fight, putting our lives on the line, fighting with the sword of the Spirit, knowing that because of what Jesus has done, we will win. We may die, but we will win. We will defeat the enemy. The kingdom will be established. The rulers and spiritual forces of evil will not stand. They'll fall. The more we remember this, the more it will give us confidence to fight without fear. If we engage in warfare intimidated by the enemy, afraid of what they're going to do, then we fight defensively and afraid, on our heels. But knowing that Jesus Christ has conquered every enemy that had any power over us, we fight with confidence. Victory is promised. Put your life on the line and fight till the sword freezes to your hand. You won't be beaten. Christ has accomplished our victory, and he's promised that we will not lose. So we're at war, and we're to fight for the king and his kingdom. We're to fight like the king who put his own life on the line so that we would be saved. And we're to fight with the king, knowing that through him, we are more than conquerors. More than conquerors. A man fights for the king. A man puts his life on the line. A man sacrifices for his work, for his community, for his wife, and for his kids. He puts his own life on the line. He stands firm to fight in the lentil fields that God has placed him in. To fight the enemy. To protect the kingdom and to advance the kingdom. So men, are you acting like men? Are you running away in fear, running away in selfishness, looking out primarily for yourself? Are you standing firm, putting your own life on the line, fighting for your king right where you stand, trusting that through him you'll be more than a conqueror? There was a war movie made about 15 years ago called The Thin Red Line about a company of soldiers in World War II. And that title, The Thin Red Line, is borrowed actually from a battle that happened in the 1850s. It was during the Crimean War. The Crimean War was primarily against between the Russian Empire. They fought against the British, French, and Ottoman empires. And during this war, the English sent out a brigade from Scotland to the Crimean Peninsula, which is just in the north of the Black Sea, the northern part of the Black Sea. And this Scottish brigade was made up primarily of Scottish Covenanters, actually, a little connection to our history. And they were called the 93rd Highlanders. And they were known both for their godliness and their bravery. And they were sent to that peninsula to help set up a defense for the port city of Balaclava so that when the rest of the British army arrived, there would be a perimeter and a defense already established. Eventually, the British army did arrive. And they unsuspectingly unloaded their ships and were trying to set up camp. And the Russians were waiting in the wing for them. And so while the unsuspecting British army, all disorganized, unprepared, setting up camp, unloading the ships, while they were unprepared, the Russians unleashed a massive attack onto the city of Balaclava. 25,000 soldiers, which was led by a heavily armored cavalry brigade. And this cavalry brigade, they were covered in armor. They were destroyers. They destroyed everything in their path. And they were leading this attack on this unsuspecting army. The 93rd Highlanders, only a few hundred men, saw this massive army headed toward the city, toward the port. And the commander of the 93rd, Colin Campbell, stationed his men right in their path. And they stood in a line, two men deep, in their British red uniforms. And it was certain death. They were certainly going to be trampled by this massive attack, just hoping to slow them down. And the commander, Campbell, rode down the line as they were preparing for this battle. And he said, "There's no retreat from here. You die where you stand." This was it. A Times correspondent was actually watching this from the hills above, and he could clearly see that there was nothing that stood in between this Russian cavalry and the defenseless British base except a thin red line of the 93rd. And as the cavalry charged these two lines of soldiers, the 93rd fired at them, sent two volleys, and immediately the cavalry turned and ran away in full retreat. This massive army, ready to destroy a defenseless group of soldiers, ran away in full retreat because they thought they were running into a trap. No commander would stand his men right there in the way of this brigade with such confidence. They wouldn't stand with such confidence against such a powerful force unless it were a trap. So they retreated. The 93rd stood strong and the enemy retreated. Men, we face a formidable enemy. And it may cost us our lives. But he who is with us is far greater than he who is with them. Don't run away in fear. Don't get distracted by the fight. Don't mess around with things that don't matter. Don't give up your ground, but he's called you to fight right there in your lentil field. For the king, for his kingdom, for this world, for our families, for our children. Sacrificing ourselves in this fight. Be strong and courageous. Stand firm in the faith. Act like men. And our king will bring about a great victory. Let's pray.